All right. Yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome to, so I guess we're at episode number 3 of the Drexel Basketball Podcast. I'm Nate. Dan's with me here tonight. So, you always hesitate to use the phrase normal, but we actually have basketball games to talk about, which is kind of nice. I was just talking to Dan even tonight. We were at the Messiah women's basketball game, which is close by. They had a COVID pause. They're playing, and thankfully Drexel's playing too. We hope everyone on the teams are healthy. Dan, I hope you're healthy. You're doing okay. I should ask that.
We're doing great over here. We're about sequestered at this point still, but we're doing great.
Yeah, it's everywhere right now. There's some reason for hope in the next couple weeks, but nice to hope the teams are healthy and hope we can keep this going and having basketball to talk about. So, I was going to talk about the women's team first, and then we'll get into the men, and then we'll talk some news about conference realignment and what might go on there. So we'll kind of go through a piece at a time here. Women's basketball team, two games over the weekend. Friday night they beat Northeastern 63-50, and then yesterday finally a little bit of a breather, they beat Hofstra 72-53, I should say. And Dan, chime in, if you have anything to add. But basically Friday night, Northeastern tried to turn it into a street fight, long story short. And like we talked about last week, teams are going to try to do, they're going to give Drexel their best shot because they're defending champions. So, and you got that sense for Northeastern. I was not in the building, but you could see through the broadcast, you felt like it was predominantly Northeastern crowd. It seemed like a pretty vocal crowd. You got the sense it was getting a scrappy's not the right word. But either way, it was just getting, get a little crazy, but Drexel, I think, there was talk on the broadcast too, that they maybe lost their composure a little bit. I thought they did pretty well to just kind of hang in there. I really like the way we shot free throws. Tessa Brewer was 7 of 7 from the line. If you're going to get in a game like that, where it's really just kind of a brawl type thing, you're going to get to the foul line and you're going to have to make free throws. And we talked with Marshall last week that we kind of struggled from the line, but Tessa Brewer really did a nice job. And I have us 19 of 21 as a team. I guess that's right. I have to double check on my handwriting. But despite Northeastern really, trying to rough it up, we still held 5 to 10 points on them pretty much the whole game. I mean, there are a couple points for Northeastern. It looked like they were going to get back into it, but we just – just kept plugging away and just had enough answers to keep the lead. Keyshawn Washington got in foul trouble, and one of them, I made a promise we were going to talk too much about refs on this podcast, but two calls in particular I'll talk about. One of them involved Keyshawn Washington, where clearly the Northeastern player, it was a block. She was sliding her feet. She leaned in about, a foot and a half, 2 feet to draw the charge. That was one of Keyshawn Washington's fouls. They called a charge. It was clearly a block. But I thought that was good because then Hajduk had to play and she filled in and got, I thought, some productive minutes at point guard. So we talked about trying to get more depth on the team. So it was nice to see Hajduk play, and I thought she did a nice job. And Keyshawn still ended up with 14 points. Nihil had 17. So, despite the type of game we played, we still kind of gutted that one out. And they have players like Kate Connolly really showing a lot of aggressiveness and toughness, got some tough rebounds. That's the way you have to play against that kind of team. And maybe the book on us that we can be a little bit soft, but not the way we played Friday night. We toughened up and picked up a win over a team that, really tried to get under our skin. And then Mariah Leonard, too, she's kind of – I feel like the last few games we've been playing a lot better. I have her down as an efficient 4 of 5 from the floor. So, again, we were able to go inside and outside, and that's, I think, what good teams do. So, it was a nice win for them. And again, taking another team's best shot. So,
Nate, a couple of questions for you, I guess, on that one then. I don't know that I've called these Dragons soft when I've seen them, but they're smaller than most teams, right? Historically, Drexel has always been smaller than most teams. So that may be, right, that might be part of kind of what a team like Northeastern is looking at when they think, they can ruffle some feathers. Is that kind of your wavelength there?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, actually it was at the Messiah game. I was like, you know, because we went, and we'll talk about the Hofstra game here soon, but it's like, I just felt like we're a bigger team than what I remember. And I think I used like 5'10 as a cutoff. I think we have 9 players that are 5'10 or bigger. And I was like, well, what did our roster look like in 2014, 2015? And I counted 6 players that were 5'10 or bigger. And then, you know, then, and 3 of them really didn't play. Like, there are names that I hadn't really heard of. So I guess to say, I guess, and it came through yesterday seeing them in person. I feel like we're trying to get bigger. So you wonder if that's maybe one of like Amy Mallon's things. She thought in the past we were on the small side and trying to get us a little bigger. But yeah, I mean, I think if not bigger, I think other teams feel a little more athletic, more physical than us. And they probably felt that way and tried to take advantage of that. But we you know, found a way either way. So.
And then I guess there seems to be, and I'll talk about this on the men's side too, but on the women's side, there seems to be about 4 teams, right, that have separated themselves from the pack, right? It's Drexel, it's Towson, it's Elon, and then I guess you can loop JMU in there. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the borderline 4th, right? You know, I get the feeling, you know, you look at Kishana was in foul trouble, only played 27 minutes. Hannah was in foul trouble, but she stayed on the court. She did have 4 turnovers. You know, but it looks like, you know, it almost feels like right now that you can play and only have one of those two have a big night. And there's enough surrounding pieces now. We're seeing more and more of the other pieces that you can kind of they can play and beat a team that isn't in that top tier, right? Especially at home and kind of hold serve, even if only one of them kind of brings their A game that night, which just seems like a really big luxury. I don't know. You agree with that?
Yeah, and that's why I kind of mentioned Mariah Leonard. I feel like, you know, she had that game winner down at I'm confusing. I think it was Charleston when she had the game winner, because Connolly had the shot to tie in regulation, I think, at UNC Wilmington, if I'm getting that straight. But bottom line is, yeah, it's players like Mariah Leonard and, you know, and I mentioned Brugler, who she has the potential to be the best, you know, I don't know, I guess you call him big man in women's basketball, but the best post player we've had. In a sense, I feel like at times she tries to do a little too much, but when she plays within the offense, like I ever down for 6 of 9 from the floor on Friday night, and like I said, made her free throws. I mean, you don't have to do too much in our offense. The opportunities are going to be there, especially with the guard play we have. So you just make the simple plays and the easy plays, and yeah, you know, we can keep ourselves in games. So, yeah, more depth than we've had in the past.
Yeah, right. And the other game that they played was against Hofstra. Was yesterday, right?
Yeah. We went down to the game. It was a nice distraction from the Eagles. You know, I thought the game started at 2, and we got there in time for it to be at 1. Of all things, I didn't play, and I didn't look at what time the game started. But it actually worked out perfect because we sat up by the president's suite and watched the game on the TV. And just funny story you'll appreciate, the only people up in the president's suite, they showed up late, of course, and they sat directly behind us because we sat in the top row. And 2 of them were wearing Tom Brady jerseys, Bucks jerseys, and Buccaneers hats. And it was almost like, I would say, I feel like someone's trying to push me to do something and end up in prison. And like that was like the next thing kind of pushing me. But
it sounds like Mike Tuberosa had a family up there or something.
Yeah. So it was all the more reason to pay attention to the game, the basketball game, not the football game, because that quickly got out of hand. But it ended up being a good distraction the way the women's team played. And, you know, not much else to say. It was 37-15 at halftime. I mean, they played really well on both ends. It was 19-4. They outscored them in the second quarter. So that was really kind of the difference maker of the game. And, you know, going back to what you said with other options, and again, last week talking with Marshall about depth, the entire roster played, and I've been wanting Hannah Satman to play, and she had 18 minutes, so she came in, I think, in the second quarter for the first time. So we were playing like a 2-3 zone, and she was the middle under the basket in the zone, and so just nice to see her on the floor, and then, you know, Tess Brugler again, you know, 5 of 6 from the line. She's been struggling. She was like under 70% from the free throw line. So by my count, that's 12 of 13 for the weekend. So that's awesome. And we got our usual, you know, Keshawna Washington, 22 points and efficient, 8 of 14. So, you know, just I think we really showed, and yeah, you said there's some separation in the standings. I haven't watched the women's game up and down the way I watched some of the men's games. Like, I know right now Delaware and Northeastern's on. Unfortunately, CBS Sports Networks are working down here for some reason, but I haven't watched many of the other women's teams, but Hofstra unfortunately seems like one of the teams that's kind of falling behind here. Everybody else is kind of based about them. They're going to be tough games every night, but Hofstra looks like they're kind of falling off the wagon a little bit. But so it's nice to have them come in and beat them up. Cause I think they got beat up the night, or I'm trying to remember who else they played, but they basically have been blown out a couple times. We kind of fought Delaware, I think, beat them up pretty bad. So we followed suit. You know, we blew them out too, and it shows we're keeping up with teams like Delaware. But no, too, you know, and it's interesting seeing the whole roster. And I hope I'm saying her name right, but well, Valentine, who has played at times, and then Ba, who came off the bench. Hope I'm saying her name right. But really, I think a different type of player than what we've seen in our program, just, you know, bigger physical type players. So when you talk about the future of the team, you know, we always have guard play, but looks like more in line with what we have with Brugler, you know, really maybe getting a little bit bigger in the post. So it'd be interesting to see. But and again, Mariah Leonard, she had 8 points, and her 3 of 5 and 2 of 2 from the line. And I feel like she's playing better game by game. So you add her to what Brugler's doing, and then we know we have guard play, and this team keeps getting better. So, and they're going into a big week. You know, they have Towson tomorrow at home, the rescheduled game from I think New Year's Eve, and then Delaware on Sunday, which is part of homecoming weekend. So, I mean, if they walk out of there, with 2 wins, they're undefeated in conference. I mean, that's a heck of a start. So so we'll see how this week goes.
Yeah, women 4-0 so far against a pretty soft schedule. The test will be this week for sure. Pretty exciting week for them, and a chance to prove they belong. As defending champs, they belong. We know they belong, but this is a chance to really put their mark on the league.
Yeah. Well, quick note, someone made a comment on the message board, which I'm usually the first guy just to say, get out of here with this at-large conversation. But, you know, someone pointed out if they hadn't lost to Marist, they'd only have 1 loss. They'd be 13-1. And I played a kind of a not a particularly difficult non-conference schedule, but then you need to be 13-1. And they are. So, that 1 loss kind of hurts them a little bit. But the bottom line is win your conference games, win your conference tournament, go to the tournament. And they're still in a position to do that. So see what happens.
I think you're right. I mean, the at-large is certainly – I guess, especially with the Marist loss, obviously, it's probably not going to happen. But had they not had that game, you would have liked them to see them punch up their out of conference a little bit. It's and they usually do. It was a surprising thing to me, and that could be part of the staff change. Maybe they weren't sure Hannah was coming back, whatever else. Maybe, you know, you're looking for a bit more of a transition year. But they have a great team on the floor. They got some great coaches. And they put themselves in a position to at least be competitive and certainly compete for the league title. Towson looks real good. Real good. I'm just looking at net ratings and RPI. Towson and Elon are both in the top 60 right now in RPI. Drexel sitting 112. So some separation there. But, you know, you're going to have those opportunities. That's the nice thing about seeing on the women's side. They have some elite programs, so you have a chance to prove yourself out a little bit. Probably won't be in the at-large conversation. Certainly if you sweep the league, you probably will be. But that's probably what it would take.
So fun week coming up. You know, get a chance, take a look, and we'll see what happens. So. All right, so you've got 3 men's games to talk about. So on the 11th, so tomorrow will be a week ago, Drexel losing to Delaware 81-77 at home. So, Dan, what were your general thoughts on that game last week?
All right, I guess, you know, we do have these little pre-show meetings, and we didn't talk about COVID this time for the first time. But I think we do actually need to touch on COVID for a second. And, you know, James Butler's obviously been down. I don't think COVID affected the Delaware game, but Delaware was where JB got hurt, if I'm correct.
And speaking of, what do you know about his situation? Is it post-COVID?
JB got hurt in the Towson game. He was out for the Delaware game. He was out for all 3 games this week. I know he took a couple of knocks in the Towson game. I think this one is lingering. From the sounds of it, looking at Coach Biker's post game from last week and some other sources I'm talking to, I think week to week more than day to day. So he was never really in it for this weekend, my opinion. You know, I think they're hoping for next week. But with Elon and William and Mary at home, I think Elon's a decent team. They certainly showed up today against James Madison. But do you push him or do you wait for him to get fully right? Either one of those teams can give you a hard game, but the way the Dragons are looking right now, much credit to Amari Williams. You know, if he's in a position where he's borderline, maybe I address him. And if Amari's in foul trouble, if he needs some minutes, you know, maybe he does an abbreviated minute stretch off the bench and gets himself back ready. But you're a long way from really knowing that. I think it's going to depend how this week plays out. How, you know, I don't know how much the coaches know from they've been on the road. He's been back at Drexel, right? So that piece of it, we'll find out. Obviously, Amari Williams is a big story this week, so we'll talk about that too. But just touching on this road trip here, where they went out with 7 scholarship players. I guess somebody said Luke House was dressed on the end of the bench, but wasn't there. So House is probably not a COVID guy. I think he's been through it recently. I think we know they were named on the message board, and I think it's fairly verified at this point. Lamar Odin, Trey Brown, a name I'm blanking on right now. We're down with COVID. The freshman class is all out injured, actually, as it turns out. I don't think we knew that because we never saw them play. So those two players were both out hurt. So it's just kind of I know you said you jinxed us. We spelled that injury.
I didn't say the word injury. Yeah.
But yeah. Last podcast there. So we're just down a lot of people at once. And obviously, Delaware, I'll tell you what, I mean, I thought Delaware – you could tell it was our first game without JB. You could tell Amari's still a little raw. But they played well. They played hard. The thing is, they played offense really well. All three of these games with the small lineup, they played offense extremely well. Mm-hmm. Points per possession are fairly off the chart. It's the defense that you worry about with JB out a little bit, which is surprising because people say he's not a rim defender. He's not, but he's a big body in the paint who knows where to be and where he positions himself well. Like, if we talk about, you know, Drexel big man, Sammy Givens was a pretty good rebounder. Mm-hmm. He was 6'5". Sometimes it's more about the other, you know, pieces of the game and what you do than it is playing above the rim. And I think JB really, within our fan base in particular, within the Drexel fan base in particular, doesn't get the credit he deserves. Certainly around the conference, but he's making the second first team. I mean, they're giving him respect around the conference. I don't think our fans appreciate all that JB does in there. I think I said this last week on the podcast, but he takes a beating game in, game out. And he's strong. He's just, you see the strength difference between him and Amari and some of the rebounds that Amari can't get to.
I was going to save it for later, but I think we'll have this conversation now, you know, because people are like, oh, well, Butler's out. So, you know, are we better or worse without him? Because in some sense, you know, Amari's picked up well. You're saying you definitely think Butler, we're worse without him. I mean, you don't even think twice.
I don't think twice for two reasons. Offensively, we're better with him. He's a better offensive player than Amari right now. Runs the pick and roll better. He's just more used to being on the floor. Yeah, I don't think there's any question on the offensive end that we are a better team with him. Having said that, again, the offensive numbers have been off the charts because the guard play has been so good this past week. The flip side, I think we're a better defensive team with Amari on the court. The flip side, he can't play 40 minutes. And that's really, we got killed in this Delaware game when Amari was off the court, when Malik Martin was playing the five for the first time. Malik Martin's a fifth-year guy who's never played the five. You're throwing him down there against some big bodies, Dylan Painter. And I don't give Martin Ingles very much credit because Dylan Painter never came in the paint. It was unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. But then you see it. You saw it happen again at Northeastern. Against a pretty big team. You saw it happen again today against Hofstra. Nobody wants any part of Amari Williams right now.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to watch the other coaches kind of react and just steer clear. It's fascinating.
I think at least a minimum for the depth issues. But I guess, you know, one thing you watch is, you know Butler, I mean, I love him too. But yeah, I love rebounders and everything. But, you know, you see the upside in Amari versus, you know, Butler, where he is in his stage of his career. So, you know, good Amari can be, but, you know, so that's why it's tempting to say, you know, and even me, I have to kind of stop myself a second. It's tempting to say that, you know, we're better with Amari, but yeah, Butler brings enough things to the table. It's certainly his depth is big, and to have him, and like you said, Amari just has that little bit of rawness that he's still putting together. Like, I mean, I thought in the Delaware game, you know, we had 15 points and we focused on the offense. I felt like we did a good job getting it to him, but in some sense, if he made some little plays, you know, he could have had more. I thought he had some opportunities to dominate the game even more, but he's not quite as polished yet, I feel like. So
just some stats for you, just to back up my guy JB here. And I never thought I'd actually be defending him because he's a great player on his own right now. I don't think you need to, but you know, I think, and he does have his limitations. So we'll go there too. We'll talk about that.
I think that's a sticking point. You know, there's, you know, he's not going to be the guy that's going to, you know, block, you know, be like a monster shot blocker. So that's where you get stuck with him. But yeah, go ahead. I mean, what other thoughts you have and everything?
Yeah, well, JB is a 74% free throw shooter. You know, Amari's hit 57% so far this season. That's a big difference in the paint. Big difference, determining factor in games like today. Although I think he did all right from the line today. And JB is fourth in the country right now in defensive rebound percentage, the number of rebounds he gets for his team on the defensive glass. Fourth in the country, which is a staggering number. He's getting a third of his shots from the opponent right now.
Yeah, and something about Amari, it's like there's some plays I didn't feel like he'd swat at the ball or he'd go one hand with it. He wasn't strong with it. And that's the thing, you know, with Butler, he's going to get two hands on the ball and be strong. So,
and that's the difference, those two. And the beautiful thing is that's teachable, right? I mean, he's a big dude. He looks like he's got a body. He can certainly grow into a strong. He's listed 250. I mean, he takes up some space. He's a load.
Yeah.
So he's strong enough to pull those down. He just hasn't been doing it yet. So some fundamentals, probably. And again, he came up in high school, my understanding is he was playing a lot of guard type of stuff. He's playing in you know, he was taking perimeter shots, and he's moving that way from time to time. And then kind of he was recruited here because he's a great passer. He's a great ball handler. And he saw that today in Hofstra.
Yeah.
He is. He's all of those things. But he's got some teachable skills on the inside for sure.
Yeah.
And he's not there yet. And that's the exciting thing, because we say all of that about him being raw, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Block percentage right now for Amari Williams, limited minutes, yes, but block percentage is 10.6. So opponent comes at him 10% of the time, he's swatting it. Chance Crawford senior year, it was 11%.
Yeah, I was thinking about Crawford, and yeah, I mean, again, you see the upside of Amari Williams and how good he can be, and I mean, I almost feel like he could be a better offensive player than what Crawford was. I mean, he wasn't really a post guy, that was Elagar, but yeah, I mean, that's what's tempting with Amari. I feel like the sky's the limit right now for him. So
the upside looks like Rob Battle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. I mean, it's. Name and rafters type of upside. I mean, it's pretty awesome to see. So, obviously, a lot of excitement there. Obviously, a lot going on, but he's still raw. And again, he needs a backup. He doesn't have one. That's the biggest thing. You need one of those guys on the floor at all times.
I guess one of the challenges against Delaware, you know, it's the mid range game. You know, Ryan Allen killed us. He had 23 points. He was 10 of 18. So that's unfortunately as good as. You know, maybe Mari is there on the post defense. I feel like out on the perimeter, we're still not doing a good job.
I think in modern basketball, they're going to tell you the mid-range shot is the one you want to give up. So they're not complaining too much. I thought Jalen Ray had Xavier Bell on him in today's game. I'm lumping these games together because they kind of played out similarly.
Mm-hmm.
And that Ryan Allen made some circus shots. I mean, he was a graduate student, senior, and I guess he was injured on Saturday, by the way, so I don't know what his status is right now. I don't even know. I'm assuming he's not playing tonight, but wishing the best for him at this point, because you don't want to see a guy, especially in a senior, go down like that. But Ryan Allen, talented kid, and he showed it. Right? He hit tough shots. Delaware hit tough shots, and they deserve to win the game ultimately.
Mm.
I think when Drexel showed up without Butler, people were worried, you know, Dylan Painter, this, that, and the other. They kind of were able to handle it again, except for when Amari was out of the game, and the guys just got run through. And that was the difference in the game. That was, you know, when Malik was at the five that game, and that's not a knock on Malik. That's just a knock on we had five cards on the floor. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah. I watched Coach Spiker's post game. I forget when you guys text messaged me, and it, you know, he made a comment. You know, why did you come back in the second half? And he said something to the effect of, "I had guys who played harder in the second half." And you know, you mentioned to me, I thought Bell and Martin were the two guys that, you know, kind of. Play that I guess triggered us, came in and played with some emotion. Did you feel that way too, or what do you think?
Yeah, I don't want to put another name in there, which is Matei Yurk.
Yeah, okay. Yep, I agree.
You know, he was an on floor. Those three guys, I nail on the head. I saw the exact same thing, Nate, and you saw it all kind of week long, especially X, and you knew this about him, but Malik's got a great chip on his shoulder that he plays with. It can hurt you at times, but it helps you a lot. And they needed some guys because Cam Winter is a great player. He's a great leader. He's not that guy who's going to, you know, start a fight on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want him to. Don't get me wrong. But we need some guys who kind of are going to throw an elbow from time to time and let people know they're there.
Yeah.
And not get pushed around, because this team has been accused of being a little soft at times.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a fair accusation. I think the first half of that game was a great you could sell it. If you look at that tape, you would say, yeah, these guys played a little soft. They needed – that's another place where JB helps them out, right?
Yeah. I think just the word I use, I'm skittish. I mean, we just – you know, I think Delaware wanted to play a little quicker pace, and we realized they weren't missing shots, and we felt like we needed to keep up with them, and I thought we kind of got out of sorts and started turning the ball over. But no, I bailed out at 18 points and Martin at 16 points in the second – I don't know how much that was in the second half, but – but yeah, they settled things down for us and I think picked it up on the defensive end too and helped us get back into it.
I think that's a big thing. You know, again, you don't want to have kind of two moral victories in a week's time. I think this team kind of had that. I think they were proud of how they left against Delaware. I think you didn't feel good losing to Delaware at home, even without JB, but you felt like they put in the comeback effort. They got close. You didn't feel terrible coming out of there. And they kind of carried that through the whole weekend. And I think that was great. Again, I think Hofstra was a game where, man, they Estrada and more Rafe to me made some really tough shots.
Yeah.
I said it to somebody today. I said, I think they made more contested shots in this game than we take in 3 to 4 games.
Yeah.
The Drexel offense is good enough where we don't take a lot of contested shots. If you look at Drexel games, they don't take a ton of contested shots.
Right, and
our guys get pretty good looks.
I think you were in my ear too with like the mid range shot. I'm like, great, you know, we're forcing mid range shots until they kill you. Like, I have more confidence. Honestly, I'll take that from Delaware because I think we could go down there, and we've seen that over the years where they just can't make anything, and you end up they fall flat on their face. Hofstra, I don't know. We'll see what they do, but yeah, I mean, you felt good about giving up those shots, but I mean, they just kept making them. Delaware just kept making them, and you know, couldn't keep up. So, But
I did, you know, and just for the Northeastern game too, and kind of carrying over it, you know, as far as people, you know, we only had 7 players. But like we just talked about, I was like, I felt we had the right guys. You know, did you feel that way too? I mean, only 7, but if, you know, if you're going to take 7 up there, I felt like we had what we needed.
I think you were at least a front court player short. You know, I think that's where they were really exposed because, you know, so let's say, you know, JB's out, you're playing Amari. Amari goes to the bench, you got to slide Malik over. Well, now you got to slide Akros to the 4. Now you got multiple guys playing out of position. It's kind of a mess. So I think the fact that, you know, most of the guys out, Trey Brown accepted, were in the front court, hurt this rest of the regular rotation guys who were out, really, really hurt. Having said that, yeah, you could do a lot worse than the 7 you brought. Right, and I thought, you know, because Cam Essence, yeah, I had all kinds of nightmare scenarios as to who we might bring when I heard there was going to be 7. I was pretty happy when it was at 7. I was really happy with the way they decided to go about it. They pushed pace. They pushed the pace at Northeastern, which we really haven't seen them do in quite some time. But Northeastern's a big team. We know that they're I think their point guard's 6'2", and he looks small on the court because everybody else around him is like 6'7".
Yeah, I feel like it's the same guy at every position when you watch him.
I think that's what they're going for. I think it's what everybody wants, some kind of wing forward at every position now, if they can do it, and maybe a point guard out there, and that's kind of what they do. I thought Shaq Walters, it was his first game back from Northeastern. He looked really poor. He had to call a guy out, but he just didn't look on the pace. I mean, he at one point stole the ball from Jamal Telford, his own point guard. You know, it was just kind of what is going on out there. And for a Bill Cone team, you know, he's usually the prince of all coaches in the CA, right? Everybody looks at Bill Cone. It was really shocking to see kind of how disjointed they were. They weren't on the same page.
That's I felt like it. So yeah, we didn't have both our post guys, but I felt like Northeastern just settled. Like Jogo, I mean, he'd take whatever 3-point shot he wanted. It seemed like Telford was the only guy that would go to the basket. So in a sense, felt like they bailed us out in that respect by not really going to the rim.
Well, Jogo went 4-7 from 3, so if I was Bill Cone, I'd tell him to keep taking any 3-point shot he wants. But yeah, to your point, and again, this may be Amari, this may be who we played in this, but that's a big team. You would expect them to. We have no depth up front, even if Amari's a great shot blocker. You expect you go at him, get him out of the game because there's literally nobody behind him.
Yeah.
And then you're 6'7", 6'8", all over the court and just dominate inside. And they didn't do it. You're right. They took 21 threes and 32 twos. So, I mean, they took a lot of threes.
Yeah.
Weren't all that successful from 3. They got to the line a little bit, but it wasn't a very good performance from them. And the flip side, Cam Winter had a great game. Really one of the best games I've seen him play, especially that second half. Second half was exceptional. I put some stuff on Twitter at the start to say half stats. They were obscene. They were really, really good. Malik Martin, again, not only puts up 12-6 or 12-7 and 3, but he does it while playing out of position for about 10 minutes. You know, that's a really impressive line from him. We'll talk about Expel. He only had 11 points and three assists and three rebounds in this game. We may be hitting the point now where we start looking at that as a bad game for Jacob Dunn. So we're going to have to talk about that too. And then, you know, Amari goes and ends up with 12 points. A lot of that was kind of cheapy dunks at the end, but 12 points, he gets the 10 boards, gets a double-double. His first double-double and five blocks.
So
just a monster. You know, everybody played their role. I think Calvin Hicks would be happy.
I thought it was the best game we played all year to this point. I don't know how you felt. That's what I thought.
I love seeing us run. I also think, you know, Northeastern, again, they didn't apply pressure. I still don't think we responded to pressure well. I think running helped us avoid it. I think running helps us avoid it. And, you know, when they applied pressure at the end of the game, obviously we had a couple turnovers. I'm surprised we're not seeing teams in the CAA come out and try to attack our guards more. Mm-hmm. Because we saw teams like Abilene in the out-of-conference. Abilene is, like, number one in the country at it, so it's overstating. But we've seen teams really kind of try to exploit that. Syracuse did a decent job turning us over. Again, another big, long team, kind of like Northeastern.
Yeah.
And you didn't see them do it. So, again, I'm surprised a little bit. I think Bill Cohn, he was away from the team for a little bit with COVID, but certainly I would think a coach being away would still have impact. I don't know what's going on. I'm very interested in tonight's game with Delaware. I'll take a peek at the score of that in a second.
Yeah, coming up, you're headed up to that, you're like, well, they're a wounded animal. They were, 0-4 in the conference or 0-3 going in, and but maybe they're winless for a reason. They're just not a very good team. So, but I thought, and in a sense, I know we picked up the time. It was 29-5, the fast break point advantage for us. But I thought the first half we played really well under control. And then, it was a little bit more of a track meet in the second half, but we were smart about it. I mean, I was just really impressed by how we, and really in a sense, I thought early on we missed a lot of open shots. We executed the half court really well, and it wasn't until the second half we shot, 71% that we really started to take it to them. But I just really thought we played well. And that's part of where I said, it's like, we had seven guys, and you'd love to have your backups, two centers and whatnot, but we have what we needed, especially the way we matched up. So worked out.
Yeah. Give you some perspective. I mean, to your point, 71% in the second half, I think we were 8 of 8 from the line too. And we basically played a perfect second half. We didn't put them away. Our defense didn't put them away. The Northeastern scored actually okay. Mm-hmm. It was our offense that created separation. You want to see better from the defense. We still have work to do there. That's what I would say. And I think that was really overshadowed. The defensive weaknesses of the team were overshadowed by how good the offense has been. Mm-hmm. We've really been rolling the last few weeks. And even we didn't shoot the three especially well today, or in the first half at Northeastern. But there's been enough else going on that we found the points almost everywhere on the floor. You get JB back, that's going to be helped out too, but you still got to find some solutions on defense at some point, or you're not going to really go into a really good team. You may not have a really good team and win.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned too, Cam. I mean, I think he went to the line when we were starting to choke the game away, and I think he had a 1-1, and I said to Melissa, I'm like, this brings back my wife, Melissa. I was like, this brings back memories of the Princeton game where he had a 1-1 and missed it. That probably would have sealed the game. But yeah, I think most of that 8 of 8 from him was at the end, I don't know how much of it, but at least a number of those free throws were when we really needed it to survive. And that's what you want out of him, because you're all everything point guard. You expect him to make big shots and be the guy that settles things down. And I think he was when things almost got away from us. So,
really nice win on Saturday. Really liked how that went down. So,
and one quick note here. We'll get you the live play-by-play. But Delaware, Northeastern at the half. Delaware is up 39-29. They do have Ryan Allen in that game. But it's another case. See if this sounds familiar. Delaware shot 60% from three, perfect from the line, and has 9 points off turnover to Northeastern 0. Mm. It looks a lot like our scoreline against Northeastern did. There's a chance they're bad. I think that's what we're going to have to say. If they're 0-6 and they just get swept at home, Delaware's kind of wounded. Allen's hurt. This is the second game of a back-to-back. They just had to gut it out against Hofstra the other day. Mm. You got to go right up to Northeastern. That's not an easy trip. And, we'll see if Northeastern finds something in the second half here. But if they don't, you really got to look at them and say this could be a really, really rough year for them.
The Towson game, the score ended up close, but Towson was really 10 to 15 points better than them. And I thought we could have pulled it. We were up 12, and so the games are, and now they're down 10 to Delaware. So it's not like they're losing close like we lost close today.
and they're getting smacked around a little bit. So yeah, they're in trouble. But
yeah, they've had a tough schedule today. But yeah, they're starting to way through the season after this game. You know, they're 6 games into an 18 game season. It's not like this won't just go away.
Yeah, and me personally, I like you said, let's have 5 big guys that could shoot. Hate that. That's why I want to talk about women's basketball, ball movement, inside, outside. You know, it's part of the way basketball is played these days that I just can't stand. And that's why I like, you know, again, we can go inside to Amari Williams. We're talking about Butler, you know, and then we can go out. We got a guy like Bell who wants to get into the paint. That's how basketball is played. So I will be disappointed if Northeastern's a train wreck trying to play that way. And we'll see what happens. But anyway, so today, we're kind of like the post game show. Drexel losing to Hofstra 71-68. I thought this was a really good game to watch. I agreed with I thought it was well played on both sides. Obviously things we could do better, but I didn't think a whole lot was done to lose the game, maybe stupid plays, that sort of thing. Hofstra just made enough shots at the end. You mentioned already Ray and Estrada. I mean, they were deadly from that mid-range game and just made the plays at the end.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen goes 4 of 5 from 2, which were, I think, all mid-range just about. And then Estrada, I mean, talk about a volume shooter. He had 26 points. He was on 24 shots, so it wasn't like, you know, he had a great, highly efficient day, but he also had 8 assists to 1 turnover. So that tells you he was pretty deadly. But he did a nice job on Silverio. He did nothing to Barr. His name wasn't mentioned. And the guys inside, now they're missing some guys inside, but the guys, Iola and Simmons. Simmons just tried to throw his body around. I messed with Amari, and Amari walked out of that game with 2 fouls, maybe 3 fouls on him, which is impressive because those guys did try to body him up a little bit. And he showed some fundamentals there for a guy who we call Raw. You know, he stood his ground. And, again, 2 more blocks today. He did have 3 turnovers, but he ends up with just 4 points, but the 9 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 blocks. So again, filling up the score sheet a little bit. Malik Martin, another nice game, but obviously, and all anybody's going to want to talk about, you know, is going to be one Xavier Bell, now the most famous Bell in Philadelphia. Pardon me, Liberty Bell. All right, I mean, David Bell, take a back seat. Anybody related to David Bell who's played baseball, take a back seat.
I remember him. Those are college days when I used to go to games at the Vet. I saw a lot of David Bell. Probably about as expressionless as I typically am. That was his reputation. So
it's true. It's true. We probably went to a lot of those games. I broke up my J-Roll jersey today just for this. But yeah, I mean, he's. I'm looking at this now. I mean, he was. I got a great text. I hope he'll be okay with me saying this on the air here, but Bill Martin texted me and he said, when I was watching his, you know, high school tapes when he was recruited, because Bill's, you know, he's a big recruiting guy. He says, you know, he had a post-up game in high school that I didn't think was going to translate because he's, you know, 6'3". Mm-hmm. And damn if he didn't try to post up 3 Hofstra guys at once in this game and hit and go to the line. I mean, mm-hmm. he was 10 of 11 from 2 today, mm-hmm. 3 of 6 from 3. He had 30 points, tremendously efficient. 17 shots, 30 points. Only went the line once. So that tells you just how deadly efficient he was in the field. Also had 5 assists, a defensive rebound. You know, on a day where Cam, you know, it was a big day for Cam. It was an emotional day for Cam. I'm sure his last game up at Hempstead in college. That's where he's from. But, you know, Cam did end up – he still ended up with 13, 7, and 2. So it's not like Cam was poor. But, you know, X kind of took over that offense and made some big plays and kept us in that – for a big chunk of that ride. Akrus went 2 of 5 for 3. They were all clean looks. You would like to see, you know, you're not going to complain about 40%. Man, a couple of those looked like they were going to go down, and that's the difference in the game, right? So that's always ones we want to take back.
Yeah.
Coltrane, again, kind of similar story, 1 of 3. Not unhappy with his performance, but he has nice looks. But again, I think Yurik scrapped it up with some of their offensive players and kind of gave them a hard time. I think I was actually trying to really, in the second half, watch Bell defensively, and he really impressed me. I know he was on Ray, and I know Ray walked away with 23 points, and you're going to tell me I'm crazy, but the way he fights through screens, the way he stuck to, I mean, he made Ray's life hard. Mm-hmm. That's all I can tell you. He earned every bit of those 23 points, Jalen Ray. I mean, it was almost what you expect from Hofstra senior guards at this point, right? I feel like every Hofstra senior guard is going to be CAA player of the year. And instead, I thought Jalen Ray was one of my all first team players going in. He's being overshadowed by Estrada now. And again, they were missing one of their key players too. And I'm blanking on that. So they were down a guy, but Yeah, they've got three guys who could certainly compete for All-CAA first team on that team. They're a really good team. My thought going into that game was that we have a seven-man Drexel team who just chose to run and gun for the first time all season. They're going to be exhausted. Mm-hmm. They got to drive from Boston to Hempstead, which isn't a treat either, after the game in Northeastern, and hang out through a snowstorm, show up, and get spanked by a really talented team. Mm-hmm. And they showed up, and they showed up. They showed up to win that game. I mean,
yeah.
Hofstra only shot 25% from three. And again, you give up the mid-range games because you can cover that a little bit better. And they did that against a really, really good three-point shooting team. They limited them. And I thought it was both because those looks weren't very clean from three.
I guess, of course, Hofstra was looking at it, and they're like, well, if we had just done this and that to stop Bell, you know, we win the game easily. What do you think we could have? I know it's a mid-range game, but when the team is pouring in mid-range shots, and Estrada, that's his game, and that's what he does. Was there anything you thought we could have done different to try to take that away?
He at one point did a step back from, I don't know, just in front of the three-point line, and it was almost an on the line too, as a step back over Amari Williams. Mm-hmm. If you want to defend that better, you know, I'd literally tackle the guy. You know, some of these shots were just, you have to tip your hat sometimes and just say, man, you know, I mean, I think Xavier Bell actually had a block on one of those on the baseline. I mean, they were in their grill.
I feel like we closed out. I feel like we could close out a little harder. I mean, a couple of times it felt like Amari Williams could have been, you know, maybe a little bit closer to the perimeter and dare them to dump it behind him, like with a cutter or something. Yeah, like a 3-2 zone. I don't know if that, you know, just put those bodies in that area so that you're right. You take that away. I was just trying to think of what we could have done because that was a difference.
In yeah, the some of the switches on the pick and roll between Cam and Amari weren't very clean. Mm-hmm. Again, two guys kind of getting used to it, and it's never really, quite frankly, been Cam's strong point, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, there's some of that stuff that certainly you'd love to clean up. I mean, you want to throw a zone at him at some point, you can, but they're going to just crush you for three if you do that. You can't throw a zone against these guys. Jalen Cooks, by the way, or Zach Cooks was the name I was looking for, who's, you know, another player of the year contender who they were missing today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, both these teams were missing significant pieces. This team went down to Alabama and won. You know, they're a good team. It was on their home court. It was the back end of a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. You showed up with seven guys, and you competed. You were tied with a minute or two to go. I'm not going to complain about any of this. I thought they were going to get smoked.
Yeah. And you watch it, you're like, hey, people always say, oh, are we watching a CAA championship preview? I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But that was a well-played game on both sides. That's why, yeah, like you start to split hairs. Like you said, I'm glad you brought up Okros because, you know, we haven't talked to him about this much. I'd like to see him add another dimension to his game. I feel like there have been a few times where he's caught it in the corner and they close out, or he's got a chance to drive, and you like to see him just one time drive that baseline and like tomahawk jam like in somebody's face. But that's just not him. But you like at some point, you know, maybe that would be him, and he kind of adds that dimension.
Same with Washington. You know, I think it's nice to see him. He took that one long three, but I liked what he did. I don't have any complaints. But see if we can get some other dimensions into their game soon instead of just being spot shooters.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think we've talked about that, especially about Akris, for a while. We've shown flashes at times this year, but you know, he's never going to be taking the ball first. That's where Xavier is special, yeah. And I'm using that word. And I brought it a stat. I dropped it on Twitter earlier today. I don't know if you saw it because I was basically Twitter bombing during the basketball game.
I tried not to because I wanted to hear Fright straight from you. I was like, I'm not going to look at his tweets. So I'm going to...
This is a cool one then. This is a cool stat. The funny thing about this stat is I dug it up yesterday before X came out and really crushed it. I have no idea if they call him X, by the way. Before Xavier came out and crushed it is I've got it here. He's shooting over 50% from inside the arc career now. Here's the list since Bruiser Flint showed up at Drexel of guys who have done that. Zach Walton playing basketball professionally. Isabel playing Jermaine Isabel playing basketball professionally. Kari Johnson, how about that, playing basketball professionally. Damian Lee playing basketball, I think, professionally. Bashir Mason, Division I head coach.
One of these times I get to see him coach. It's on my list of things to do. To you know, you see, you know, we go to the King's Royal. We make these trips, and I want to see Bashir Mason coach. So one of these times. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I'd love to go with you on that one.
Yeah.
The rest of your list is Tim Whitworth, who played professionally, and Jeremiah King's the only one I don't know for sure. Played professionally after school. I think he did, but I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. So everybody basically has gotten paid significantly and really had successful careers after they left Drexel, who's been able to shoot 50% from two as a guard. Mm-hmm. It happens frequently as a center. As a big man, you don't see the guards do that a whole lot. You know, he's smashing it this year. Xavier, obviously 10 of 11 from two today was exemplary. But he's doing it with mid-range shots. He's doing that in the paint, posting up. He's the best finisher I think I've seen as a Dragon since Damian. Certainly, you know, he gets the line, he takes the foul, but he doesn't, unlike say Tremaine, who goes in there, tries to get the foul and throws it up. He completes the play. Like X takes the hit and just keeps going. Right. And that's cool to see. So, you know, he's kind of stronger than he looks, I think probably. Mm-hmm. And the 3-point game has come along nicely. So you gotta, again, we talked about, you know, I don't want to make this too much of a fan show here, but like if you're going to really tell me that Amari Williams' ceiling is Rob Battle, and we're going to say that's not crazy, and that Xavier Bell is having, you know, professional, you know, really good professional league type numbers as a sophomore, I'm going to tell you that this team's going to be, you know, again, every podcast I say it, the sophomore class is special. Mm. It's just special. It's really got all the looks of it. You combine that with a big group of seniors here. You just look down our positions right now, and you see you've got Butler and Amari at the five. You're feeling really good there. Mm-hmm. Malik and Odin at the four. You're feeling pretty good there. You know, any number of shooters, but namely Okrus at the three. You're feeling good there. And then Bell at the two, who's looking like he could be really something. And then you put the CAA preseason player of the year at the one. Mm-hmm. Like, if this team isn't in the championship game this year, we should be probably disappointed. And I know... the flip side to this, right, is we came in today and thought they were going to get smoked, and they were competitive, and I'm happy, right? You want to set your expectations low. Zach Specker will tell you why you can't set your expectations low, and I'm setting them really high right now and saying they need to be in the championship game. You should be this, but they really, like, there's so much talent on this team. If they can stay healthy, stay together.
Yeah, and the only thing, and I just pause my head, because I think they made a comment in the broadcast about how Amari's like a pro prospect, and I'm like, you know, these days with the, that's not going to be this year, but the transfer portal days, it's like, man, you just hope those guys, the vultures, stay away, you know, and don't kind of try to nab these guys, because not just this year, but that's why it's important. You get a chance to win a title, you got to win a title, because you never know what the future is going to bring. So
you can never know what the future is going to bring, and certainly a guy like him would be welcomed anywhere. But I think he's here with his high school teammate, you know, and he's not connected to a locality. You know, he's not from the States. I think that helps you out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think more importantly, you know, I don't think he comes here if Matei Okrus wasn't having a great time, right? If he didn't kind of help with the recruitment. Mm-hmm. So they're having fun. They're being at Drexel. They're competitive. They're having a good time here. They want to play here. Zach Specker says he wants to have kids who want to be here. They're kids who want to be here. So I think you've got a chance to keep them around, hopefully. Yeah. And then you know, yeah, I think again with that core, you say, oh, you three guys stick together, you're gonna be special together. I'd want to be a part of that. Yeah. Just me, but
let's give. I think we've done a good job. We've mentioned like every name. Well, you've mentioned Coach Spiker a few times, but just to be specific, yeah, give him credit for this weekend. I mean, you know, again, to be shorthanded and the way we executed in the half court and played, yeah, offense. I mean, defense, we have to improve, and then. I mean, a lot of me was sitting those last few years waiting for recruiting. It's like, when are we going to start getting players in here that, you know, that can compete at this level? And he is. And it seems like, I mean, I don't follow this, you know, as close as some people, but, you know, if we're picking guys off that have professional type, you know, pedigrees and stuff, then, I mean, you have to believe he's doing the diamond in the rough kind of stuff that we probably thought you had to. You weren't going to get the big time, you know, even 3-4-5 star player, he had to find a guy and develop him. And that seems like what we're doing now.
No, you're 100% right. I'd love to get Bill Martin on that, but I think you're 100% right about that. You know, I don't think people were clamoring for Xavier Bell out of school. He had other invitations certainly, but brought him in here and you're turning him into something. They're using that toughness. What I love about the pickup of Bell in particular is that he's a Bruiser Flint guy, right? When you think about our teams over the years, right. And, you know, he's 6'3", he's tough. You know, he comes in a little raw, more raw as a shooter. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's developed into this, which is great. But it feels like a Buflik guy. It doesn't feel like a Zach Spiker guy. You gotta have an outside shot. You gotta be tall, long, want to run. And we always said kind of early on, right? If Brew just recruited the Spiker guy Spiker had, if he had recruited shooters in his system, it would have worked out. I think the inverse is also true. If Spiker recruits guys who are naturally tough and defend, you know, that's going to help him out a lot. And he can coach up the other aspects of the game, and him and his staff will give the staff credit as a whole, yeah. You know, very well. So I think they're doing it. I think they took some shots this past, you know, with the sophomore class, and then they're coming up really looking good. Well, you know, the freshman class, nobody has any idea about. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, hope for something, and then a big year next year for recruiting, obviously.
But as you mentioned that too, it's like, you know, you think of freshman guards coming to our program who essentially got destroyed. You know, you think of, I mean, what's the classic? Was it Colds had like, I mean, just shot the lights out at the Palestra against Penn, and he felt like that was his best game of his career. And, you know, meanwhile, and this is kind of splitting hairs. The only thing I noticed in the box score, you know, you lose a game 3 points that you thought could have gone either way. You know, Estrada played all 40 minutes today, and he was their star player. You know, Bell, you know, he played 33 minutes. And there were a couple times I'm like, man, leave him on the floor. But you say Bruiser Flint would have ridden him. I mean, he would have had him out there 40 minutes and beaten him up. So in a sense, you know, it is a little different, you know, and I guess in a sense smarter, you know, you give Bell a rest. But you're used to, I'm just thinking of Bruiser the way, yeah, he had a point guard and whether it was, Bash or Massenet. I mean, those guys, they were like a running back who you gave 40 carries to in a game night after night. And in a sense, we don't really do that. We don't ride any one particular player, and there's probably good and bad to that, I guess. So, but are you still here?
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. I just lost headphones for a second. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So,
all right. But yeah, so you know what other, and we'll talk about it, Larry Lyman briefly here too, and here to bring a guest, but it's making me think at what point do we hand the keys over to the sophomore class? Like, I still feel like Cam is kind of like our point guard and our guy, but I got to be honest, I think there's times I almost feel more comfortable if I needed a basket. You know, I actually felt that way at Princeton when we let, you know, we gave the ball to Cam and said, here, Cam, make a shot. I felt more comfortable with Bell being that guy. Do you feel that way too?
I think it's unfair. I think, you know, it's kind of like the Tampa Bay Bucks, the wide receivers, when they're all healthy anyway, right? When you've got two really maybe the better reference actually is cornerbacks in the NFL, right? There are some really good lockdown corners, and there's some guys who can knock down number two receivers. And then you promote those guys to try to take on the number ones, mm-hmm. and you see what happens. Like, I think Cam takes all the pressure right now. The coaches are still game planning for Cam. Now that will change if X keeps doing this, right? Xavier still keeps doing this. But right now, coach, you know, the defenses are all geared around Cam. Get the ball out of Cam's hands. Don't give him any close shot. You can see it. I mean, when Cam's getting good looks, it's because the ball bounced around a couple times. We caught a loose ball and somebody kicked it out and Cam was standing there, right? Like, that's basically the only open shots he's going to get all game. Xavier's got a little more latitude than that. The game planning isn't quite so intense for him. So I don't think we're being totally fair to Cam. I think, again, we take Cam and Butler for granted a lot here. We're a little spoiled at this point as Dragon fans. We're coming off a championship, and we're looking down the barrel of being competitive for another one. Credit to the staff, credit to everybody else, but I think that we've got to, you know, let the kids grow. I think that, though, what you're saying, especially if the coaching staff uses it correctly, is going to be true, as people have to not be able to slant pressure over to Cam because they're worried about Bell. You know, Cam should have more opportunities.
Yeah.
And what I really hope for at the end of the season, you know, come late February, March, is that we have balance. Cam's still a really good player. Different type of player. He's not as strong with the ball as an Xavier. Xavier's more exciting to watch. And I get why. And again, Amari is more exciting to watch than James Butler. From a pure fan perspective, right? Who's going to dunk? Who's going to get the blocks? Yeah. Right? Who's going to jump off the page at you? But, you know, pure fundamentals, you know, Cam's still the better player. Pure fundamentals, James Butler's still the better player.
Yeah, that's so, I feel good. Now I feel good. It's like, I don't mean to knock Cam, and I guess ultimately I am. I think the one thing I would really like to see out of his game is and he did that. He got the shot, you know, that it looked like he got fouled.
underneath the basket. I think got us within one and they didn't call it. But every now and then I just like to see him, you know what, F it. I'm driving to the rim. You know, you guys, either I'm gonna put it on the glass. I'm either going to make the shot. You foul me. I go to the line. Like, do something when he's not hitting and he's kind of quiet offensively, just kind of get some dirty points. That's the only thing I like to see out of him. And I see that from Bell. And yeah, I guess that's the kind of player I like. And so that I guess that's the biggest difference I'm seeing. So
the only thing we saw once today, we saw Cam tuck it under and run once today, and he kind of did a little floater in traffic. And I wish he would do it more. I agree with you. The other side is, and it's one of the big differences between the two players, Xavier's not gonna care about the contact. Mm-hmm. Cam's gonna pull up a lot of times from 6-8 feet, and he hits those shots a lot, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. But it's a different way of doing it.
Yeah,
you know, personally, probably. And Zach Spector's going to be pissed because 20 years from now, we're still going to be talking about Bruiser, Flynn, and Drexel. But, you know, watching Bruiser's teams, right? I want to see the guy who goes hard and finishes. I think everybody, just from a fan perspective, wants to see that. Mm-hmm. But if Cam's way is just as effective, you know, he hit the floor.
You know, he makes them great, but there are times it's like he seems like he's just missing one after the next. It's like, man, put your head down and get yourself to the free throw line. And,
I'm sure he's heard it times, but you know, he's also a guy they really want to fund, you know, taking a lot of pains in his career to keep out of foul trouble, to keep healthy. He's been taught to avoid this stuff. It's tough to unlearn it now just because you suddenly have depth. So, yeah, it's kind of where I lean with it. I think there's arguments for all of it. I think there's a bunch of guys on this team who would be helped by being more aggressive. Or Christine Coltrane, they make some runs now, which wasn't the guy I expected it from. But, you know, it's not like they're not teaching or pushing it, I don't think, on the staff. I just think that the guys, when they've been effective from a certain place on the floor, when they just have certain moves they're comfortable with, you know, to fall back on them until they're kind of forced otherwise. Mm-hmm. Necessity is the motherhood of invention. Zach Spector quote again, right?
And you get hurt during that stuff, so maybe we're saving it for March. But yeah, we'll see. But I did want to run a little short on time, I guess. So do you want to talk about, at least share the realignment news, and maybe we'll talk briefly about it?
Yeah. So Monmouth appears from multiple sources. They're in fully in all sports. They would be the one-to-one JMU replacement. They have football. Mm-hmm. So if you put that aside for a minute, say, hey, we're a 10-team conference. We shifted a little more north. You lost JMU. You've added Monmouth. You know, that's interesting. There's a report by John Rothstein, take it for what it's worth. That I think Stony Brook and Hampton are in. Hampton's been trying to get here for a long time. It'd be a nice travel partner for William and Mary, especially if you say want to go back. Now that's been together with the early report out of the Richmond Times Dispatch that the CAA would like to go to divisions. So, and we'll talk about that. I'll talk about that a little bit more with the surprise guest if I get him on later this week, hopefully. But if we're talking about divisions and talking about a lot more schools, that gets a lot more interesting quickly. But those are the schools that we kind of are known to be in the hunt right now.
Okay.
Then there's a rumor on every other school on the East Coast. there's only one, and I think it's apt today, that I really, really want to talk about because I think it would be exciting, and I get the arguments for and against both. But Howard in Washington, D.C. is been bandied about a few times. And if you're bringing in Hampton, which is an old MEAC partner of theirs before they went to the Big South, it would almost make sense to bring in Howard and lockstep. They would also give Towson a travel partner potentially. You know, it does a lot of nice things for the conference. They're a great academic institution. Obviously what they bring from a diversity and, you know, the Howard name is real, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, I'd love to see it happen. I think the CAA would love to see it happen. I think my understanding is if they leave the MEAC though, the MEAC does not have enough schools left to sponsor football. And I don't think they would do that to that league. There's too much history, right? There's obviously a special bond in that league between those schools. And, I don't think they're going to be the ones to expose that. I don't think going to the CAA is worth it to them, you know, for the hit that they would take in their recruiting base. So, and just, I think to their own, in their mirrors. So the interesting thing is what if one of the other MEAC schools leaves and they're going to lose football anyway, and that's really possible. And that's on the table. And that would give them the face to move. So that's a school I think I'm most interested in at this point. You're going to hear a lot about Albany, Binghamton, Fairfield, Quinnipiac, again, Stony Brook, whether in or not, whether Stony Brook's joined with Albany. And those are just the schools in the north I've been hearing about. I think if Howard falls through, I think we should be talking about American a little bit. I know they're comfortable in the Patriot, but it wouldn't be a bad school for the CAA.
Yeah.
And they put some money, you know, ultimately you're going to look at who's basically building new buildings. It's looking like they're committed to sports. Monmouth is a great example of that. They've got, it's a 10-year-old arena at this point, but a pretty nice, relevant arena. And they just put $16 million into the football stadium. You're going to be looking at schools like that, probably on the 95 corridor with an airport. You know, you're going to bring a metro market. That's kind of where you need to be thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, the other way, who's going to leave? I think, you know, obviously JMU did, and I'm running out of reasons to see Wilmington remain in the conference. So I think they would take the Big South in a heartbeat. I don't know if they'll, the SoCon in a heartbeat, but I don't know if they'll take them. So if they leave and where they go to is going to be an interesting case. And then, so ultimately, let's take this step back for a second and say if there is a division split, how do you fill out the South? It's going to be a really, really hard conversation. I literally sat with a map last night with all the colleges on it and tried to figure out how you would fill out a Southern without Wofford or Furman. Which does sounds like there's just not a lot of interest there. And it gets really, really hard, really, really fast to find really good candidates. So it's going to be interesting to see. They can want to have 16 teams. You got to get them. And they've got to be relevant and on the same page. And it sounds like, or however many teams they wanted to go with, it sounds like they also want to have balance in football and basketball, you know, enhance the CAA football at the same time after the loss of JMU. Put themselves in a position, you know, to do things if the NCAA changes as a whole, if we see structural changes in college basketball.
I guess you said a couple times, you know, what the CAA wants. What do you think Drexel wants? Because that's where I stop. It's like I don't say much about these things because I don't really know where our perspective is. Do you have any sense of what we want?
I think if I'm Drexel, I want – and you tell me, but I think if I'm Drexel, I want the following things. The conference that is strong academically. I think they still care about that. I think that's meaningful to them. Strong media markets and places where we recruit talent from. So the Northeast predominantly. You want to be on TV in Boston and New York and where we're still probably going to be with Northeastern and Hofstra and everything else. Most important to me, if I'm running Drexel right now, I don't want to lose a game of musical chairs. I don't know how much pull Drexel has in the general scheme of things, but what other conference wants Drexel? Like, I think the Patriots, maybe. I know it's been bandied about a bunch, and they're Pennsylvania-centric, so maybe. But I don't know it for sure. And yeah, I mean, a lower conference, the AA East or the MAC, probably, yeah, you'd get into, but do you want to, I mean, the MAC isn't a great fit for you. The AA East would be fine, but you know, that's a slap in the face, basically, at this point. So how do you get out of this without being slapped in the face? Mm-hmm. You're not going to go to the A-10. There's half of Philadelphia in the A-10 already. You know, you're not going to go to the American. They've got there's just you check the boxes and say there's not a lot of places to go. So if I'm Drexel, I want to secure CAA first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And when JMU leaves and if UNCW starts talking about leaving and if William Mary starts talking about leaving and if Northeastern starts talking about leaving, all of whom have options out of the conference. All of them have options out of the conference right now. You end up possibly losing a game of musical chairs where there's not enough teams left to sustain the CAA, and you're caught holding the bag with nowhere to go but down. Mm-hmm. So if I'm Drexel, my number one priority is security of the CAA, which is crazy because the CAA has done not a lot of good for you over the last couple decades. But listen, John Fry's, you know, the chairman of the board of presidents of the CAA right now. We are fully in on the CAA. Mm-hmm. So it's about security. It's about making sure you can maintain a conference. I don't think you'd care about football. I don't think you'd be fine divesting it from a Drexel perspective. Mm-hmm. But it's important enough to keep – it helps keep members here, you know.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe – you know, because I think you start – what do you think Drexel is? What does Drexel want to be? Who are we? I guess I think about it, we can never figure it out. You know, we have trouble defining that, I think. And I think the CAA, in a sense, has trouble defining that. So maybe that's why it's a perfect fit for us. We're kind of like the misfits that can't quite take that next step. You know, like for me, the A-10 would have been the next step for us, even though there's so many Philly schools. You know, that didn't happen. And then I agree. I mean, I don't know that the Patriot would be a step down just because I think it's so an academic type conference. So at least you gain that kind of notoriety. But the MAC and the
Merrick East, I think, would be a step down. So just like Drexel, we're sitting right by Penn, and you know, people always have this little insecurity about us. I feel like the CA maybe is the fit for us. And, you know, and then, you know, I made a comment on the message board the other day. I mean, you do have to give the commissioner credit, and we'll see how this will all play out. But I mean, it seems like there's a plan to keep the conference alive. And it's something that's, like you said, it's been at risk, I feel like, a couple times of complete collapse. So, I mean, if you can keep it alive again, I think there needs to be some credit there. But we'll see how this plays out.
I'm going to say this on Joey D. I think he's a fine guy. I don't know about him as commissioner. When things go wrong, it's quick to defer to, well, the president's, you know, the James Madison blow up earlier this year, right? They made it very clear this was a vote from the president's. I think any expansion or contraction will be a vote from the president's. You know, I don't know that the conference office has a ton to do with it one way or the other. You know, if they're gonna divest credit for the pain, they need to get it, you know, divested for the success. Ultimately, this is the university presidents and ADs trying to position themselves as best they can. And to your point, the biggest problem with the CA for a long time has been, you know, what's Wilmington's best sport at this point? It's probably baseball. Mm-hmm. Towson's is probably lacrosse. James Madison's is football. You know, William Mary's, they don't really know. You know, it's kind of Northeastern's is hockey.
Like, we're talking about basketball. That's one of the problems with the conference too. There's no, like I keep saying, there's no flagship basketball program right now. It's like every year somebody different winning the championship. So
yeah, if you had one, you'd probably say it's Northeastern. They've won a couple times in the last 6 years, but like they're not far and away, and certainly this year is going to be a shot in the foot
for them. Yeah, they're 0-5 in the conference this year. Yeah, so
So it's nobody's got the same mission statement. You know, what they do have, for the most part, they have a couple of things. They're all pretty good academically, pretty strong academic conference, and by and large, and this is where Charleston and Elon, this was pointed out to me by somebody, and I appreciate it. Charleston and Elon recruit a lot of students from the Northeast. They also want to be on TV up here, right? So when I'm looking at schools in the South who would want to be a part of this league, I'm thinking about that. Who wants to be part of this league in the South because they want to be a part of the Northeast media markets? Who wants that exposure? Yeah. And that's an interesting question, because there are, you know, JMU was a public school but still recruited a lot from the Northeast. There's probably some other public school instances down there. There's certainly what you would think private schools, you know, first and foremost. So it's an interesting question that kind of acts like an app state from the conversation or something like that. Not that they'd be interested.
Yeah.
You know, when you go through rumor after rumor and look at the universities and say what makes sense, that's why Howard is such an intriguing target, right? That's why I keep bringing them up, because they would be a great target. You could put them in the Southern pool and they'd be a great fit for us on almost every level.
And me, I personally, and ever since I started following Drexel, I feel like anybody south of Richmond, I don't have any interest in them. For me, if we kept everything in the Northeast, I'd be happy with that. You know, from a geographic, you know, that's my other thing. I've always said I like playing the guys next door, and you know, going down and playing Charleston and Elon, it doesn't do anything for me. I don't really worry about what they want to do recruiting wise, you know. But then again, if the CA wants to follow that blueprint, there are a lot of other conferences doing that, you know, like the ACC and stuff. Now you could debate. I think they really ruined their football. Actually, in some sense, their football and their basketball, I think they're both kind of a poor product right now. But that does seem to be the blueprint. Yeah, have like a North and South. But I'd be fine if we just kept it in the Northeast, to be honest. So, and or DC,
the nugget I'll give you won't make you happy, which is the consideration for divisions would be for Olympic sports only. There would be one conference for basketball. I don't know exactly how they would work the schedule, obviously. You know, I think you can be creative with these schedules. I think you're seeing more and more conferences doing that, trying to protect their stronger teams. If you've got 16 teams playing for one crown, you know, that makes it harder for you to make the tournament.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta think about that for a second. And so how are you – and so that means – it also means that whoever makes the tournament, obviously, you need to play as many games as you can, be successful, whoever goes, because there's – you got to spread those credits around, you know, the money you get from making the tournament and playing those games to more teams. So – I think that they'll get creative with the scheduling if they do that, and whether it be 12 teams, 14 teams, whatever. I think they'll get started. We're going to start seeing creative scheduling. It's not going to be you play everybody twice.
The bottom line is Monmouth is the only one that really seems that was the one I had seen kind of like looks maybe firmed up, but
Mine looks firmed up. I'll trust the report, and it's reasonable. If Hofstra, I mean, Stony Brook has been wanting in for a long time. I think Hofstra's blocked it. If Hofstra's getting on board with conference expansion, they may have let that wall go down. So Stony Brook's reasonable. Again, Hampton has been trying to get in for a long time. Makes sense for us with JMU leaving. Gives William and Mary somebody close by. Both those make sense to me. So I would probably say those three are likely.
Yeah.
The other thing is I don't know what year anybody comes in. My understanding, by the way, is that the MAC and the AA East both have the same rule the CAA does. If you announce, your teams are ineligible for conference play or for postseason play. So unlike JMU, we discussed this in the past, who kind of use this as a fundraising activity and at the expense of their student athletes. I think those schools are going to stay quiet, you know, until such a time they need. So this is the most kind of confirmation you're going to get. Is these kind of leaked media reports.
Yeah.
So, three and a half down, and for me, yeah, I think we'll see. We'll see if Albany is really in joining the hick with Stony Brook. I have no real desire to go to Albany ever. Mm-hmm. So
there's some hot dog places up there. I read about that somewhere around there, like a small hot dog that maybe like eat north of there. But no, believe me, I'm with you. So.
Fairfield and Quinnipiac, those drives stink on a weeknight too, but they're at least, you know, interesting and geographically makes sense.
I want to see Mount St. Mary's because I hop on 15 and it's about a half an hour south, maybe 45 minutes. So that's what
Mount St. Mary's have to find the checkbook.
Yeah. So, all right. So, we went on long enough. But we'll see how this plays out. At least some interesting things happening. So, anything else you want to throw out before we call the night here?
No, I think that's it. I think we got a big week coming up for Drexel basketball, right? You got to have the men come home. They've got probably their easiest weekend of the year. Mm-hmm. So you have to sweep it. You get your guys back, get healthy. We'll see if JB is back or not. But those are two you have to sweep, especially because the schedule after that is absolutely challenging, really, really hard. I think it's four straight road games after that and tough road games. So you need to go come home, hold serve, take care of business. The women, the exact opposite, right? They've got two really, really tough games this week. Mm-hmm. Would you be happy with 1-1, Nate?
No, I mean, they're the champs, and, you know, I think they're good enough to win both games. So I think they probably, you know, I guess I just think back, Delaware was, to me, a much better team than us. We just found a way to beat them. So, you know, in the tournament last year, so I wouldn't be surprised if we lost Sunday, but the way they're playing, I think they should feel like try to win as many games as you can now, because you never know what the future could bring. So, but I agree with you too, the men, I mean, yeah, this is, you got to be thinking 2-0, and that's got to be, so let's win all these games this week, and we talk about wins on Sunday night.
All right. Well, that's great. We got a big week of hoops. We're kind of, it feels like we're in the swing of things now, doesn't it? And yeah. COVID's maybe crested, so
it'd be nice. We'll
see how that goes.
We'll see. Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining us, and then we'll see you most likely last Sunday night. We'll figure that out later. So, all right. Have a good night.
Have a good night.